Welcome to Smart Citizen. I'm so glad that you're here with us today for this interview with Lauren Logan, who is running for school board. I'm Emily Bowes, and this is Smart Citizen. Welcome, Lauren. I'm so excited that you're here today and would love it if you would tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for school board.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here. This is a great opportunity that you're doing for everyone who wants to get better involved and be more informed. Back in February, running for school board started out just to be part of the community, get back to this community. I grew up in Virginia Beach. I traveled a lot in my last life as an IT consultant, so I've seen a lot of places in this country, and I still just love Virginia Beach. You have the best of everything here, in my opinion. So that was February. So then everything happened, COVID happened, and the further we get to election, the more it is about getting kids in school and how to do that safely, and really be an advocate for teachers and staff, because I have a real worry and concern about that portion of our heading back to school. So a little bit about me, I bring kind of a different background to the board. I went to an all-women's college, then I went straight into IT consulting. So I work for Computer Sciences Corporation, IBM. Those two jobs, I traveled all over the country. I was even in Europe for a year. So it was a great job, but I got really tired of traveling. So then I went to Newport News Shipyard and I worked in their IT department there. So then I had three children, and then I got my master's in education, where really has to do more sports administration because youth sports is my passion. So then I worked for Girls on the Run, which is a youth empowerment program for girls. And now I run a youth league K-8 to help grow the sport, love of sport, and also substitute teach. So I have a quite varied background. I talk about my IT life as my past life. So I've done quite a few things. But I think a lot of that experience can really benefit the board.
As we're getting so close to the election, if people could hear more about one issue that you're especially passionate about, we'll dive into a bunch of different things, but I want to make sure that if there was anything that you wanted to make sure we talked about today, that we got to it. So what would you say to you is the primary, most important thing that you want to make sure people are aware of or keep in mind as they're getting ready to vote?
My biggest thing right now, it started out being, paying teachers, and it still is paying teachers, but I am very concerned about how teachers are moving forward in this going back to school. They're asked to do, we're all trying to do more during this time, and we all have to stretch and do things we probably didn't want to do. We're all learning new to go about life different ways now. And they're doing that, and they love their kids, and they want to be in the school, and they want their kids to be in school. Mm-hmm. But I think we're getting to the point where we're asking too much. And I think the plans to return to school are being pushed so fast that the teachers simply can't keep up, and they're leaving, which is going to cause a long-term problem for teacher retention. So I want to stop that from happening, because it's already happened, and I don't want more teachers to leave. So I was happy to listen to the school board meeting last night, and Dr. Spence says they're next move forward will include talking to all the teachers and their opinion on how to move forward. So I was really happy to see that, because it didn't seem as though from listening to a bunch of teachers that they had their voices heard. They were being told what to do instead of being given choices. So that makes me happy. That gives me some pause that they're moving in the right direction.
Taking that further then, with the current COVID phase back plan, it sounds like you're quite aware, and I've seen on your social media, you've spoken quite a bit about the plan or in support of different measures. So what do you view as things that are being done well right now? And what things would you seek to change if you were to be elected?
A lot of things are doing well. I mean, they've done a lot of things the way I would have done them. Pre-K through 3 is in school. That, in my opinion, they They cannot learn as well virtually. Their parents, if they're even lucky enough to be home and have the patients, are having a difficult time helping them learn virtually. Then you have some special needs children that also need to be back in school, and that has also happened. I thought it was brilliant to let sixth graders and ninth graders go back because they're already nervous about going to a brand new school. And to have the whole school to themselves makes them feel like, you know, they run the school. I have two ninth graders who have gone back, and they've been back 4 days, I guess, and they are so happy to be back. But I feel good as a parent because everything is social distance, because they have the entire school to be there. So I think all those things have gone well. My kids that are going to school, the bus is not a problem. They're social distance on the bus. I think all those things are going well. My concern is moving forward. And I last night, I was really happy to hear all the various plans they're trying to entertain, because I simply don't understand how you can get all these kids back in school and social distance, because I coach girls, I coach ninth grade girls, I coach middle school girls, I take my kids to swim team practice, I take my son to baseball practice. No matter what a coach does, these kids will not stay 6 feet apart. That's just not part of their DNA. Like, yeah, they're social people. They want to get together and talk to each other. And I understand that. So while learning virtually is difficult for some, we're all trying to learn how to do things virtually. And I think 7th and 8th and then 10th through 12th have a better chance at it, and that we need to work hard to get them into school. And like I said, last night I was very impressed with the way things were moving forward as far as thinking about it. Now my son, I got an email from his principal basically saying, for all the kids that have picked option one, there's not enough room. There's simply just not enough room. And I thanked her for sending that email, for someone finally admitting, you know, classrooms didn't magically get bigger. So I was given the opportunity to revert back to option two, so my son can learn virtually the rest of the semester, because I thought it was important that if there are other kids out there who really needed to go to school, that we would give them an opportunity. So I have two in school and one that's staying virtual for the semester. So I think I would continue down the path that they've started. Mm-hmm. I was just telling a friend of mine yesterday morning, I was like, you know what they need to do? They need to keep those ninth graders in there and then let seniors in there. And that's what they said at the board meeting, something and similar things to that effect. So I was really happy to hear that.
Good. You obviously have a strong IT background. And from what I've heard and the little bit that I observed, I was roommates with someone who is a high school Spanish teacher before I got married earlier this year. So I watched a lot of the February, March, April transition. And I know things are different now, but it seems like there, from an outsider's perspective, it seems like there have been quite a few different tech challenges. And I can only imagine trying to move that many students and teachers and schools and things. There have to be tremendous technological challenges. So how do you think your background with IT or tech would come to bear on, you know, what you would bring to the school board, or do you anticipate, you know, utilizing that part of your past life? It seems like it could be helpful, but I don't know if you're orienting yourself in that direction or what your thoughts are.
I implemented software, HR, payroll, time management systems. I wasn't into networking per se. And I think that's probably where the biggest problem is networking and make sure everything's connected and everybody has connectivity. I am very happy that every single student in Virginia Beach has a Chromebook and access to Wi-Fi, because if they don't have it at home, then they're provided a hotspot. And all the technology that we're using, I think having the teachers relearn how to teach virtually was a huge ask. I mean, what doesn't happen overnight. You don't go from the classroom to teaching virtually. So they had to put a lot of work into how to teach virtually, how to use the tools. I've done a lot of training when I implemented the software that I implemented. I also did a whole lot of training for the people who were going to use it after I left. Mm-hmm. So training on software is extremely important, because people don't like change. I mean, in general, they just don't. That's not the report I wanted. I used to have this. Now I need what I had. And So there's, you have to be aware of that and be patient with that. So that experience in my IT world will help with that, because I don't think we're done making changes, right? So that we've used some software, we're going to have some lessons learned over the past month and a half, 2 months, and there's going to be adjustments needed based on lessons learned. So it's moving fast. It seems to have slowed down some, which makes me very happy, because like I said before, I want to make sure our teachers who are extremely stressed, we don't need to put any more stress on them.
My question, I've asked a couple of different people who are running for school board, and I know it's a challenging thing that is everyone trying very hard to balance, but for families that may not have the option, you know, I have a neighbor that is a single parent with a kid that has, you know, some special needs as far as learning. And I think now a lot of those kids are back, which is good. Was really helpful, you know, for him, but for families that, you know, maybe both parents have to work, or just the option to have their younger kids at home, or even middle school kids at home, is very, very challenging. What do you see, you know, as options for those people, or how do you take those situations into account while still trying to maintain, you know, a slower phase back plan?
That's a great question, because through all this, my biggest concern are those kids who have a parent that's working three jobs.
Right.
And how do they get what they need when they're not sitting in school? I know the city has implemented free online tutoring that you can have one-on-one. I think that was a great move and very beneficial to especially those kinds of kids who don't have their parents standing over them all the time, making sure that they can get on. And I think it's another challenge for teachers, right? Are all your kids in your class? Are they paying attention? Especially the one who's home alone and their parent isn't like on them, making them. So it's another problem for teachers. One more thing that they're going to have to try to get through. So it is a really challenging question. So yeah, I worry about those kids the most in this pandemic. But I'm trying to keep a big picture view. We are all in this together.
Right.
And we need to reach out to those kids and neighbor, or, you know, your teacher would know, hey, this kid is home alone. Keep a special eye on this kid. So I think we need as a community to gather around people that are in these kinds of situations and help out, because we are all in this together. And I there's over 200,000 people dead. And every time I say that, I get choked up. But in the long run, you know, we have to keep people safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, no family sitting around right now going, well, you know, my mom's gone. How could it have, you know, they all are like, why us? You know, you don't know what family is going to touch. So we just need to do our best to keep everyone safe.
Of course. And it's a lot of challenging pieces and moving parts, and, you know, especially when you're talking about something like education, everybody learns differently and different people thrive better in different contexts. I've heard so many interesting stories about, you know, people whose kids are doing better in a virtual context because maybe they were more introverted in class, or it was harder for them to hold still and they're able to move around and have, you know, more things that actually work better for them in a virtual environment. And it seems like there could be potential to lead into interesting future, you know, fusion learning kind of things where, you know, kids that maybe thrive better in a remote environment can do some of their work that way, or some of those things. Would you be looking into implementing some of those things? Because I know you mentioned concern about going forward and not having enough space. You know, what does that look like? Or I've heard people mention the situation of military families who maybe are here for 3 years and move, and, you know, their kids,
family.
Right. Their kids in their senior year of high school, and they move to a new school, and, you know, could they finish with their classmates, or, you know, like what kind of options could there be where you can actually find opportunities that are really positive that come out of this? So I don't know if we're at the point of thinking about all of that yet, but just curious if you're thinking about any of that, or, you know, what kind of opportunities you see that are positive that could come from this as well.
That's a good question, because I do see a lot of opportunity. My son particularly seems to be doing very well virtually, mainly because he doesn't have someone sitting next to him that he's chatting with. Not that he's introverted. He just wants to talk to all the people in the class while the teacher is trying to teach. So I think there are some kids, and I think there are some opportunities. The virtual learning center that they're setting up for secondary schools, once they start moving that direction, have some history behind them, there can be lessons learned, and we can pull things from there. What do we do right? What do we do wrong? And I do believe that there is a way to do that, because right now, the state of Virginia, you can learn virtually and on a state level. The thing you lose is the community feel, right? So maybe you are now learning virtually from, and you're connected to your home high school. So now you feel connected to that community. You want to go to the sporting events and you want to be part of that community. So right now at the state level, you don't really have that, but you're getting the education you need. But yeah, I think that's a great opportunity to let some kids, especially some kids that are, unfortunately, I know we have a no bullying policy, but we know kids get bullied. And as much as we try hard not to let that happen. So there might be situations like that where kids just don't want to be in school for reasons like that, and they are thriving virtually. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. That would be something on the radar to look at, is after they've set up this virtual learning center, you know, what were the great things about it and what can we, you know, fix?
Can you tell me more about that? I'm not as familiar with that virtual learning center being set up. Can you tell me more details?
Well, from what I can gather
from the outside, right? I know you're not
from the outside. It's kind of changed. Like, was there a virtual learning center? Was there not a virtual learning center? Are teachers teaching in the virtual learning center? Are they not? Which is causing all kinds of stress and problems right now. From what I can understand from the board meeting last night, there will be a virtual learning center on a secondary level for secondary students, where you can be in an English class, a ninth grade English class with, you know, ninth graders all over the city of Virginia Beach. And that would be your class, regardless of what school you went to. So it's more of a citywide, you know, this English class, this math class, no matter where you are in the city, you're assigned to that teacher in that class.
Is that to help overcome the teacher shortage, or what's the reasoning behind that change?
Well, they initially were going to do it. And I think as they started to roll it out, it didn't quite, it's like the chicken. You don't know how many kids wanted to stay home versus go to school. You didn't know how many teachers wanted to teach virtually versus go to school. Mm. And all those numbers swirling around kind of were all on top of each other. And which one do you do first? All the kids who want to come to school, or the teachers that want to teach at school? And I think once it all washed out, at the elementary school level, they were able to accommodate all the requests and all the needs of those particular groups of people. I think where they had an issue was more on the secondary level, where they needed to have, plus they can do more virtual learning at that age group. So they were able to do that. That's my understanding from the things that have popped up. And, you know, I'm not in those back meetings of the school board. So
this is good, though, because I want people to understand how they can be informed. And, you know, obviously you're running for school board, so you're very engaged. But even as a parent who has kids in the system, you know, how can parents be on top of these things besides just whatever update emails they get? Obviously, we've pointed people to streaming the school board meetings and reading the minutes and emailing them questions and those kinds of things. Are there other ways that people can be involved besides those? Are people still going to present at the school board meetings in person?
You can sign up to talk. You get 3 minutes that you can talk in front. And, you know, they have to wear a mask and they social distance. And you can come in, speak your 3 minutes, and then leave. There's no sitting and watching, because the room is not as big as you would think. So that's currently, you can also do that. You have your 3 minutes virtually.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you can also watch. So sometimes I watch the school board meeting on my phone when I'm taking my son, waiting for my son to finish some practice. So you can watch it virtually. You can watch it on your TV. You can sign up to speak in person, or you can sign up to speak, virtually.
Going back to the virtual learning center question, I feel like that raises another interesting question. That's a little bit of a I don't want to say hot button issue because that seems like a little too strong of language, but just a topic that's come up this election on a national level is school choice or school choice vouchers. And I think it's an interesting conversation to hear people's perspectives on, because it seems like there's lots of different perspectives on that. And if you have a bunch of students from all over the city learning in centralized areas, it makes me curious how then you allocate budgets or those type of things happen. So if we're going into a potential future where there's lots of different types of learning environments, do you see that being something like school choice vouchers or the money following the student being a helpful thing or not a helpful thing? What's your perspective on that?
Well, you know, no matter how you're learning in the virtual learning centers, you're still attached to homeschool. Your homeschool where you have your counselor, where you have your principal, you have other things that are besides your English class that include the entire package. That's the team, that's the school you can play sports for if we ever, I hope we get back to that. But I think the Virginia Beach taxpayers have done a phenomenal job creating a phenomenal school system. And I cannot understand why anyone would not want to participate in the school system that taxpayers have paid for, that you have a vote about, you have a voice in. So if you choose not to participate in what the taxpayers have provided, I don't think that you should get paid to do that, that I don't think the money should follow the student. I think the taxpayers have done a phenomenal job of creating a great system, and you should take part in it. And if you don't, then that's your decision, of course. And then that's not something that a voucher or money should follow you.
And with sports, I know that you obviously are a coach and very passionate about sports. So what impact do you think COVID has had on sports? What do you see for sports going forward? Or do you maybe don't know yet?
Well, I spend a lot of time thinking about it. So for sports, my family chose to make a calculated risk, and we went back to swim practice in June. We went back to lacrosse practice in June, baseball practice in June, all the outside things. And when I coach, I wear a mask. We ask our teams to wear a mask from the car to the field and from the field back to the car. So we're trying our best to make it as safe as possible and still play. So I think we've done a good job with that. I see a lot of soccer teams out there practicing and playing. So it looks like a lot of the outside sports like soccer, golf, lacrosse, baseball, they seem to be getting by and getting through this. Their season might be a little short. How it's impacted, and this will impact our spring, is we rely heavily on schools' fields. At, you know, like from 5 p.m. and on, we rely on them to have a safe place for our teams to practice, all of our rec leagues to practice. And those were not available to us right now in the fall. They were not available to us, obviously, last spring. So that's a huge impact to growing sports in this area, is not having a place that we're allowed to practice. Right now, I coach a travel team, so we pay money for our fields, but rec leagues simply aren't able to do that financially. So that's one impact. Then
why are those fields not available?
The city has not opened them to use, because the schools are like, you know, they don't want more use on their fields. I mean, I understand, but that's why they're not open.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's fine. The city has not accepted any applications for field use until further notice. So like I said, our travel team's able to pay for it. What I'm worried about, the VHL came out with a new schedule trying to get sports in. So I'm very happy that we're moving in that direction, because I know a lot of people, they miss their spring sports. If they play a fall sport, they're missing that too. My nephew was supposed to start college, but he plays a fall sport, so he took a gap year because he didn't want to miss eligibility on playing his sport. So hopefully it works well with winter sports starting first and then sneaking fall in between winter and spring. And I'm happy we're trying to do something. Because I'm a spring sport coach and I rely on a lot of fall sport players, like field hockey players that come play lacrosse, because they overlap, we might have an issue with being able to field spring teams.
With your coaching experience, I had an interesting thought or was curious to hear your perspective because I've sort of heard mixed reviews. It seems like there's been some challenges for the current school board just working together, collaborating, and there's been some tensions there. As a coach, what would your approach be to, if you were elected, to bringing, you know, some collaboration or teamwork, if you will, into that setting to make sure that things can, you know, get done?
Well, actually, more in my IT experience, when I went to companies implementing a software that nobody was ready for or wanted, but the boss said they had to do it. there's a lot of contention sometimes on, you know, who are you? You don't work for this company, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you had to work through that to have some understanding that not everybody thinks the same way or does the same thing. And we did a lot of team building exercises. So when teams are not getting along, you need to kind of remove yourself from the environment, kind of go do some, sometimes they're silly, sometimes they're funny team building experiences. So I think pretty much everywhere where I have worked, we have done team building exercises. When I worked for Girls on the Run, we went, the whole staff went down to the Outer Banks and participated in some team building activities. And that, it was very beneficial. I don't know if you've taken a test like the Myers-Briggs, but once your staff takes a test like that, you can go, oh, that's why you do it that way. And you have more of an understanding. So I think that's a really beneficial way to help people start to collaborate because they start to understand each other a little more. It doesn't mean they still agree on everything.
Absolutely.
But you don't want everybody to agree on everything all the time, right?
Well, and if you're representing a diverse group of people across a very diverse city like Virginia Beach that has lots of different people that represent lots of different views, I would imagine you would want to have a very diverse set of viewpoints, you know, diverse ideas on the school board, but you have to be able to, you know,
get along,
bring those together to make some sort of progress. So no, that's a really interesting idea. I haven't heard that suggested yet, but it does make a lot of sense. And there can be a lot of value in those kinds of exercises. And I think while you were talking, I was reminded of, I think, a challenge that a lot of people are having right now in that, you know, so much of our world is virtual and everyone is so stressed out that it can be so easy to lose sight of just the humanity and, you know, the things that everyone else brings to the table and sort of get into our little silos of our own things or, you know, what we're thinking or what's going on with us and forget, oh, you do that because you're an extrovert.
Yes.
Not because you're a terrible person. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Those are great things to be reminded of. The Enneagram is fun for that as well. I don't know if you've got into that, but that's another fun.
Yeah, I've done a few. I did one when I worked at Newport News Shipyard. The whole team did something very, I forgot what it was called, but you basically were these letters and, you know, and said, this is the kind of person you are. And I actually read what I was supposed to be. And it basically said, I'm not happy until I've achieved some goal during the day. Like, I can't even go on vacation unless I've achieved some goal. I mean, I was like, that's really sad.
Is that true? Okay.
But true.
It's good to be self-aware though, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I go to Orange Theory in the morning, because then I can check the box. Well, I've worked out today. I've met that goal.
That's amazing. See, and that's great self-awareness. You talked on your website, your campaign website, quite a bit about preparing students for the 21st century economy. And I thought that was a really interesting phrase. So can you tell me what that means to you and what you would seek to do to implement or encourage that if you were elected?
Sure. Well, college is great. And, you know, I went straight from high school to college. My brother did the same and failed miserably because he just should not have been going to college at that time in his life. You know, everybody's different. But I feel that right now, and pretty much always, we haven't get enough credit to people who want to do something other than college. You know, we have the ATC that allows people to learn all kinds of very high paid skills. They can move in that direction. Think about a car mechanic. It's not just wrenches anymore. It's whole entire computer systems. So I think that we need to spend more time, and basically it's marketing, if you ask me. It's just a marketing issue. So yeah, college is great, we're in a military town. I grew up, my dad was in the Navy for 22 years. You know, I moved, came back to Virginia Beach. The military, college, all these things are great, but I don't want someone to say, well, oh, what are you doing after graduation? Oh, I'm doing the, you know, saying that you're doing something other than college or something other than the military shouldn't be something you're sad about. There's so many things that we need done in our community that don't need a college degree. So I opened up my car under the hood and it's like all encased. Like you need some very skilled labor to fix cars these days. That's just like my one example. So I think we should do some more marketing with companies in the area to try to help sell these career paths that are not college bound students to make it seem fun in the way that, give them internships. I know the Newport News Shipyard, they're really great internships for like welding. And they have a whole school that you can go through that, you know, you learn how to weld, and that's an extremely high paying, much needed skill set in this area. So that's what I mean by it. You know, I just want to make sure that, yeah, college is great, but there are other things out there that we can let students know about.
I attended a forum on education and technology probably 2 years ago, and there were a bunch of different teachers, consultants, people representing all different grade levels and things. And one big thing that came up over and over was this idea of rebranding technical schools or trade schools, and how, you know, in the last 20 to 30 years, as college kind of became mainstreamed and there was this huge push that everyone should go to college, every child should be prepared for college, in order to push that idea, which has a lot of merit for certain people, culturally, we sort of downgraded the idea of a lot more blue collar jobs, you know, even working in manufacturing or working in different trades or doing things that don't require a degree. And so they were saying, you know, we really culturally may need to change some of our conversation around these different types of work, because they can be very meaningful, you know, really add value to the community. And you can make a lot of money.
Can you imagine what it'd be like if we didn't have any Amazon drivers?
or electricians or data scientists, you know, systems, architects, all those kinds of things. I mean,
our air conditioning went out last week and it was hot. We couldn't fix it. I mean, thankfully somebody could come right away because it was getting hot, but yeah, it's a marketing issue. Like, we need to make sure that people feel that these are valued avenues after graduating from high school.
You also mentioned increasing I thought it was really interesting the way you worded it. Oh, growing the data sector and more military and civilian partnerships. I know you just started to talk about that, but what would be some other examples of what that might look like? Because another thing they talked about in that forum was the idea of brain drain in Virginia Beach, that, you know, a lot of people come, grow up here, go to school somewhere else, and then, you know, don't necessarily come back to the area, or trying to figure out ways that you kind of make it attractive for people all the way through school, through college, and then to return and invest here. So do you have any ideas along those lines? Is that some of what you were referencing, or am I reading that wrong?
No, that's what I was alluding to, is keep people here. It used to be when I was in my 20s, you know, and out meeting people, they're like, oh, where'd you grow up? I'm like, here. I grew up in Virginia Beach. And they're like, what? We've never heard of that. And I was like, yeah, I love it here. I've traveled all over the country for my job. And I've seen a lot of different places, but I love it here. But that is changing. Like, nowadays I go out and like, oh yeah, that person's still in Virginia Beach. I mean, the locals are now staying more. And I think it's because the city has done a great job of making opportunities grow here. I mean, just look at Town Center.
Yeah.
I mean, that's brought a lot of things to the city, a lot of theater, that kind of thing, that, you know, keeps people staying here. Cause I know people, oh, why do you want to live in Virginia Beach? They don't have this and they don't have that. Well, they do now. We have theater. We have all kinds of things that would be, plus we live at the beach.
Plus the beach. I do love the beach. We also have areas like the Vibe District has been really cool, the way that that's really been transforming that area.
Yes, I went to the market there at Crocs a couple Saturdays ago, and it was, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna spend a lot of money here. There's so many great products. But it was, yeah, it was really fun to go down there.
It's been fun to see it evolving. One thing that I've appreciated, I've lived here for about 4.5 years, and I actually moved here from New York City, which is completely different animal. And people are like, how could you move here after New York? And I was like, well, I never expected them to be the same thing. So, you know, I'm never going to try to compare New York to anywhere because it's its own creature.
Yeah, we don't have Broadway, you know.
Yeah, it's like a unicorn. Like you wouldn't expect anything else to be like that. But it has been really exciting to see, you know, over the 4.5 years that I've been here, I've seen a lot of development, a lot of change. And I've found that really encouraging, just to see the cultural things growing and those kinds of areas. And I do think those things attract more people to stay in this area.
I think we've hit top 10 places to live on a few of those polls that you kind of see go through Facebook. So the cost of living is low. The education is phenomenal. So, like I said, I've traveled a lot, and yeah, it's such a great place to grow up. That's why I have my kids here, to go to school in Virginia Beach.
That's awesome. The centrality on the East Coast is really nice as well. I think that makes it very appealing. Oh, yeah. Also, you can just get to a lot of places really easily. One thing I know has been important to you, and you mentioned this earlier in the call, but we didn't really talk about it. So I know the Virginia Beach teachers did not get their raises this year due to some budget cuts. And you talked about, you know, prioritizing teacher salaries and competitive hiring. And I imagine there's lots of competing budget priorities right now. What would you do to help change that current situation if you were elected?
Lobby hard to prioritize teacher pay. Teachers, we need, well, like I said, when we first started, the teachers are leaving and leaving and leaving. I get a new phone call. Oh, my daughter's teacher just left, and they're on their third teacher for English class. And it's, you know, the middle of October. So we already weren't paying them enough. Now we're stressing them out beyond belief. So as soon as they can, they're leaving. Mm. So as far as getting them paid, I will do anything I can. That'll be my top priority. But you're right, it's going to be very difficult because everyone's budgets have been slashed because of COVID. It was already an uphill battle. Now it's going to be even bigger than that. So we need to figure out a way to make them feel valued, because I don't think they feel valued right now. So until we can get compensation there, we need to make them feel more valued and more heard. So again, like I was happy to see Dr. Spence mention that they are talking to all the teachers on how to now move forward. So they seem to have taken a pause, and now they're going to talk to teachers, and hopefully that'll make them feel more valued and feel like they don't need to leave.
I'm a little surprised that wasn't being done. Did they not talk to teachers before?
I genuinely don't know. I love the administration has done a great job, but I think it happened so fast. The teachers were asked, but not heard. Because the sense I understand from the teachers I've talked to is, yeah, they asked, but didn't seem like they heard what we said, and we were just told to do something regardless of what we wanted to do. So that certainly didn't help after they didn't get their pay raise, to not be heard. So, you know, above and beyond money, I will do a lot of things if I feel valued. Like my sports league, I don't get paid for it, and I work at least 40, 50 hours a week doing that. And I don't get paid for it because I feel valued and I feel like I'm doing something for the community. And I think teachers feel the same way. But if they're not getting paid and they're not feeling valued, then they're out the door. Mm-hmm. So I think we need, while we're waiting for
ways to give them their payback and looking at the budgets and trying to figure out how to reallocate some money back to them. I mean, there's drastic things you can do, like extremely drastic things that I wouldn't want to do and I wouldn't do. But, you know, some school systems have to get rid of sports to pay their teachers. I mean, that we would hate to do that. I would never do that. But there are some drastic things to do, and we don't want to do those things. So hopefully we can find ways in the budget to reprioritize to give the teachers their money. But in the meantime, we need to make sure that they are valued.
So practically, what would that look like if you, because you've been a substitute teacher, you've mm-hmm. been on both sides of that, you know, being a parent, being a teacher. What are practical things that could be done in the absence of budget to make teachers feel valued? What are some of those things that could be changed more immediately?
Well, I know it sounds silly, but when I was subbing, I was a permanent sub at a middle school. And the teachers have like 5 minutes in between bells. And there's three floors. And there's a teacher's lounge on each floor. And each teacher's lounge has a copier, 2 to 3 copiers. Well, the longer I was there, the less copiers worked. So they have 5 minutes. And they're trying to all now figure out which one works, which floor is it on, and who's using it. So things like making sure they have the tools that they need, like copiers and the paper they need, so they don't have to spend all their time figuring out how to copy something. They can just go get it done real fast, or have a student, you know, I don't think they have students doing it, but things like that.
Or someone like that.
Yeah. I mean, it might seem like a little thing, and I know copiers are expensive, but they're wasting a lot of time and getting stressed out over something that could easily be fixed. So I think things like that, and maybe we can work with our local businesses to, not on a regular basis, but when they can, give more, here's a card for free dinner, you're a teacher, here's this, you know, more things from the community to say you are valued because you are teaching our future.
More teacher appreciation initiatives.
Not just 1 week, because we have a teacher appreciation week every year. Mm-hmm. And that's what parents do for their teachers at their school. But it should be more of a community effort to value our teachers.
I've heard that there's been also something that's added stress or to those, some of those time constraints, is there's been different things around like the cleaning they have to do in between classes and stuff like that as well. And I don't know how much you know about that, but would you look to streamline some of those processes or make sure that there's kind of a clear process coming into next year? Some of that may have been resolved. I don't know. Can you speak to that?
Well, my understanding is every year the teachers my kids have, they ask for tissues, hand sanitizer, you know, all the things that they end up going to buy themselves, which should be provided for them. And that's not changing. Like in COVID, they are given some kind of cleaner, but it has a huge warning label on it. Do not, you know, you need gloves, you need this, you need that. Don't get near children. If the children are in the room, you can't use it. So that's really daunting to use that kind of cleaning product to begin with. And then two, I'm not sure that, my understanding is they don't have all the PPE that they really need. And if your bell is 5 minutes time span, how are you going to clean the entire class and watch the kids in the hallway and get a bio break and copying? Like, there should be some more time in between those bells to get those things done, not just the 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that should be one little thing we should be able to do, right? Give some more time in between bells. To let teachers be able to do that. But then you're cutting into instructional time. So I think it should be worth it. If they really want these teachers to do all those things, they need to add time in between those classes.
I've heard different people that are running this year have a lot of differing opinions on the new equity policy plan. And I don't know actually if the two things tie together, but that, and as well as kind of just school discipline ideas. And that came to mind as you were talking, because some of the suggestions that I've heard would be, you know, pulling kids outside of class and talking to them, or, you know, trying different things. But if you have a teacher that has 5 minutes in between a class, they're cleaning, they're copying, they're doing this, they're doing that, you know, what do you do then if you have kids that are having disciplinary issues? Do you think, I guess the first question I should ask is, do you think that that's a challenge right now that should be addressed? And if so, you know, do you have any ideas for how those things can or should be addressed going forward, especially given the challenges teachers are having right now? So let's talk to the discipline thing first, and then we can talk about the equity plan.
Right. So I've done I've done some research on this, and they call it the prison, the school to prison pipeline. And everything I read about it makes me so sad these kids and disproportionately African Americans are in this pipeline. And so, yeah, I thought, well, what do we do about this? This is a huge problem. These are kids. And they make mistakes. My kids make mistakes. Hey, I still make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So I've done some research, and what they're finding that really helps is to, in the elementary school level, is to have counselors at that level that can help identify mental health issues, that help identify other issues that are going on at home, and give those kids attention that they need to help work through it. And that seems to help them later on through the school years. Hmm. There's also some thought that, you know, also in the elementary school level, you come up with this general language of more positive talk, and that there's more, you do this, this is what happens, and there's no wishy-washy, like, oh, well, that person did it, he gets a different punishment than someone else. That should not be the case at all. So there's a combination of all those things that I would greatly support, especially the being more positive. You know, on my kids on the field, I try really hard not to say negative things to them. I don't want to say, you should have caught that ball. Well, they know they should have caught that ball. I mean, that's part of the game. But when I see them doing good things, I give that a lot of attention. So I think there's programs in place to try to help move a more positive conversation and help them younger find the mental health problems or other issues at home that need addressing. As far as if you're already out of elementary school, it's still a problem, right? So there's, when you send your kid out for out of school suspension, what really does that benefit? I mean, now this kid gets to be at home playing video games all day. So how is that negatively impacting the kid? You should not send the kids away. There's got to be a way. And then in school suspension, you just make them sit at a desk all day. That's better than out of school suspension, but we need to have more positive ways of working with the students that are having so many problems.
Hmm. Would you look to have more counselors in the secondary level to try to support some of that? Or, you know, proactively, if you're having students that are causing disruptions in class as a teacher that doesn't have a lot of resources, you know, what could be some practical solutions in your opinion that could be applied, you know, going forward?
Well, I think
what we have now, I guess, with what we right. know now, you know?
Well, I think as a country, we're learning mental health issues are a bigger problem than we've ever been willing to admit. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraged by the fact that as a country, we seem to be putting more spotlights on mental health. And I think that is a root of a lot of issues, that if they're given the resources they need, that helps. So having a mental health professional in school can help identify. Now, there might not be enough time to give them, I don't know, all the counseling they need, but at least identify, hey, this kid needs this kind of extra help at some point. Let me help you get it. Like my kids, when they go for their well visit at the pediatrician, there's a quick 3-question piece of paper that they have to answer that I'm not allowed to see. And it talks about mental health. It takes them 3 seconds to fill it out. And it gives the pediatrician any indication on whether he needs to make a step to push these kids into the direction of mental health, like if they're depressed or they're anxious. So I see a lot of anxiety in schools these days. So that doesn't necessarily replicate into punishment, but there's a lot of very anxious kids in our school system right now. So I think as a country, we need to spend more time on mental health, and certainly as a school division, we should work more on mental health.
I know we only have a few more minutes. Do you want to speak to the new equity policy? It looks like I've seen some stuff that you've posted about it on your social media and those type of things. I don't know if there's anything you want to add. As far as I understand, it's more that the school board has voted to begin exploring what the policy should be. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doing a study, commissioning a study to then
get
recommendations to make changes.
I quite frankly don't understand why anyone would not want to start the process. It's completely overdue. Like I told, I have two ninth graders and an eighth grader. They've been in Virginia Beach school system since they were in kindergarten. And I asked them, out of all the teachers they've had, how many African-American teachers they had. Out of all three, one. That should not be the case at all. So I don't know how anyone could argue not to start the process for more equality and equity within our school division. We need to look at our teacher hiring process and understand why our teachers don't look like our community. And I have a real problem with that. So one of the things I would really do is really look into our hiring process. And when they apply for jobs, when minorities apply for jobs, what is preventing them from, between the application process and the, you know, hiring process? Mm-hmm. So why are they not being hired? I spend a lot of time trying to figure that out, because the fact that my children have had one African-American teacher is ridiculous. Mm. That needs to change. So I would totally would have, had I been on the board, I would have voted for that equity policy to come in, to have a third party come in and tell us what we're doing wrong and what we need to focus on the most. We can take those things and prioritize them. The biggest, you know, what can we do first? What is low hanging fruit? Like, I'm sure the hiring process is going to come out in that study. So I'd be anxious to see what they came up with. And it's long overdue. I don't know why anyone would not want to start the process.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've heard anyone, at least not that I've spoken to, necessarily opposing it. I think the main criticism that I heard was that they didn't feel like there was enough diversity represented in the boards or in the whatever group was kind of helping spearhead it, that it was primarily African-American and white people, and they wanted to see more Latino people, more Asian people, like generally more diversity, which is an interesting argument. You know, I think it makes some sense because we do have quite a diverse population here. So, from a diversity perspective, I think that was the main criticism, if you will, that I heard of that particular policy. Lauren, can you hear me? Hey. Oh,
sorry. I mentioned my internet was down most of the day. I guess it was glitching again.
That's okay. Totally fine. I was just wrapping things up. So, is there anything that you would like people to keep in mind about you specifically as they're going to the polls this November or this month, actually, if they're early voting?
Well, keep in remember that I am very excited and passionate about being on the school board, and I am more than ready to get to work.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us and having this conversation. I really appreciate it. It's been great getting to talk to you. And
nice. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I have your website here. So if you want to learn more about Lauren and some of the things she's running for, you can check out laurenloganvb.com. And don't forget to register to vote by tomorrow, now that you have that extension.
Yep.
And come follow Smart Citizen on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Smart Citizen USA. And we'll continue to keep the conversations going. We will see you guys next time. I'm Emily Bowes, and this is Smart Citizen.
Thank you.